In the book of Genesis, God said, "The man has become like one of us, capable of knowing everything, ranging from good to evil." My summer reading has included the book, The Blood of Emmett Till, by North Carolina's own writer, Timothy Tyson. The brutal abduction and murder of 14-year-old Emmett Till on August the 28th, 1955, in the state of Mississippi, literally galvanized the civil rights moment and movement. You may have even read in the newspaper the last few days that they are opening the investigation once again into that tragic death. What exactly transpired in that grocery store that afternoon may never be known. But we do know that Till and his friends went into the grocery store. He purchased bubble gum. And later accounts, he was accused of either whistling at or flirting with or touching the hand of the white female clerk, Carolyn Bryant. 4 days later, at approximately 2:30 a.m., Roy Bryant, Carol's husband, and his half-brother, J.W., kidnapped Till. They beat him brutally. They dragged his body to the Tallahatchie River. They shot him in the head, tied barbed wire, and a large metal fan around his head, and shoved his mutilated body into the water. While interviewing Carolyn Bryant, who has now changed her name and actually lives in Raleigh, North Carolina, for the book, she admitted to Tyson that she had lied about Till making advances toward her. We may never know the story. From the garden and Adam and Eve to today, we, you and I, have the ability to know everything, ranging from good to evil. And the prophet Amos writes, "Seek good and not evil, that you may live." I'm sure I don't need to remind you of the evil that is all around us, but bear with me for a moment. A man who had been asked to leave a Boise, Idaho apartment complex returned the next day and stabbed children celebrating a 3-year-old's birthday. A former student went on a shooting rampage in Florida at Parkland High School, leaving 17 dead, while panicked students barricaded themselves in classrooms and parents rushed to the scene. During a prayer service at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, Dylan Ruth killed 9 people as they gathered for Bible study and prayer. 28 died during the Sandy Hook shooting, 32 at Virginia Tech. We know, we see, we fear evil, for we feel it as well. In the Lord's Prayer that we prayed just a moment ago, we prayed to be delivered from evil. The psalmist in that psalm that we all remember and recite proclaims, "Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil." The psalmist does not pretend that evil and death do not exist. No, terrible things happen, and they happen to good and bad people alike. But the psalmist doesn't try to explain evil. He doesn't try to minimize evil. He simply says he will fear no evil. as we are literally overwhelmed by the evil acts just down the street and around the world, we know evil exists. Evil and sin are part of life, just as much as loving God and our neighbor. We live in that tension of good and evil sometimes, and maybe often, daily. But the good news is that we live in a faith that God is with us through it all, the good and the evil, and with the assurance that we can meet each hour and each day. And that, in the midst of all there is the good news. That is the good news. Amos was one of the leading prophets of the 8th century BC. He lived approximately 750 years before Christ. His primary message was the destruction of Israel. Called as a prophet, Amos was always insisting that he was a layperson, but he had received a word from Almighty God, and he had to go and proclaim that word. Chapter 5, of which we are zeroing in on the book of Amos, contains the heart of his message in that book. The themes of righteousness and judgment are there, as well as that great summary verse. Listen to that imagery. Let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Here, Amos is treating judgment upon Israel as if it had already happened. In this time period, it seems that crime did pay in Israel. He proclaimed that the day of the Lord was coming, but it would be a day of darkness and judgment for Israel. Come to Bethel, the main place of worship, Amos begins, and we are to imagine him standing outside that sanctuary, watching the crowd as they enter and worship. But the prophet makes it clear that the problem doesn't have to do with the adequacy of their worship, but rather the attitude of those worshipers who were coming in to worship. We are literally told the Lord does not like the smell, the sight, or the sound of what is happening in Israel's sanctuary. God is upset with his people. The prophet goes on to list 7 aspects of Israel's worship, all of which are rejected, and we know of the importance of 7 and the completeness. Amos is witnessing rampant cheating going on in businesses, judges being bribed in courts, gross misinterpretation and mistreatment of the poor. Religion has grown shallow and meaningless. He sees people that have become so self-indulgent and soft, and their leadership very, very corrupt. Amos believed the people had it all wrong, crying, "Woe to those who wish for the day of the Lord, for only darkness would fall on them." They were hoping for something else. But he was saying, as you celebrate your festivals, as you worship, as you do the necessary things, you have good music, you bring your offerings, but it seems that things were going all wrong. What about feeding the hungry, being an advocate for the poor, treating your neighbor fairly, trying to do all the things that it seemed like you were getting God's favor? Amos proclaimed that they needed to be agents of justice. Doing justice. Is the people of God responding to what God has done for them? He had led them. He was leading them. Respond in justice. To seek justice here means to care for the widow and the orphan and to act for the powerless among you. It was not a ritual that God wanted, Amos said, but righteousness revealed through just living. Again, let justice roll down like waters, and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. A side note. Most of the time, we today in our society think that justice is what the good are rewarded and how the bad are punished. But in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew, the word for justice, mishpah, means that the neediest in society are cared for. A just society takes care of those who are needy. That was Amos. Amos came speaking of injustice that was going on in worship and daily living, and now we hear from Paul. Paul was trying to inform the listeners, the now Roman Christians, who were finding themselves on the outside of their social circles due to their beliefs and their practices. And now it seems that the family members, their co-workers, their neighbors who had not converted to Christianity did not understand and did not approve. The behaviors were suffering and persecution was near. But Paul says very distinctly, do not repay anyone evil for evil, but take thought for what is noble in the sight of all. Paul assumes that Christ's followers are not exempt from the evils of the world. We know that evil will visit us, he says. The question is, how will we respond? As we respond to evil with blessing and not curse, we point people to Christ and we give hope. We give witness to the hope that is within us. Paul advises us of some do nots. Do not curse those who persecute you. Instead, we should bless them. He also says, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Do not be overcome by evil. And when we refuse to respond to evil with evil, we diffuse conflict and we infuse our areas of influence with peaceful living and the spirit of God's almighty love. Do not be overcome by evil, Paul says, but overcome evil with good. As people being transformed by the renewing of our minds, we look on our enemies with compassion, serving them at every opportunity, and overcoming any evil they have done in the process. A warning. Without Christ, without Christ in our lives, this is impossible. It will never happen. We humans are too prone to identify as God's enemies those who displease us. The Christian task is to embody the grace to enemies in such a way as to form reconciliation and peace in their lives, and to see that gracious deeds burn away hate, not within them, but within us. Without Christ, it is impossible. Barbara Brown Taylor writes, bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse them. Because the moment you curse them, you join them, and however good it may feel at that moment, you are surrendering to the evil and the curse and the injustice of the moment. The only way to conquer evil, Paul says, take it into yourself and disarm it. And Barbara Brown Taylor uses this language that I like. Neutralize its acids. serve as a charcoal filter for its smog. Suck it up. Put a straight jacket on it and turn it over to God so that when you breathe out again, the air is pure. It comes through us and through Christ. The air comes out pure. When we repay evil with evil, evil is all there is. The bigger and more toxic piles become within us and our society. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. You may have never dealt with questions surrounding evil. For me, the problem of the evil is perhaps the greatest single problem of religious faith. I must confess to you that I am so thankful that I worship and believe in a God that I think not only allows questions of faith and life, but I maintain that God welcomes them and encourages them. Sin and suffering and all kinds of evil acts are happening all the time. And in the face of such tragedies that we mention and others that are taking place, we want answers. As part of our DNA, we want to understand, we want to maybe even be able to explain what has happened. And how many times have you sat there in disbelief and said, there is no way to understand, to wrap your mind, your heart around it? Throughout my Christian journey and as a minister, I have not been able to answer these questions. Instead, I have lived with the questions, and I do not think that my faith nor my commitment has suffered because of that. And I turn to Job in the Old Testament, and we see in his experience that we cannot always expect life to make sense and certainly not to be fair. We all must come to terms with the fact that we cannot accept and expect answers to all of our questions. Job learned this, and we must learn this. For Almighty God cannot be limited to any human belief system, yours nor mine nor anyone else, and still be God. But that's all we have, is our language, our minds, our humanness to understand. Dr. Tom Long, a professor in Atlanta, a former Parker lecturer here in this church, wrote an interesting book entitled, What Shall We Say? Evil, Suffering, and the Crisis of Faith. I've read this book on several occasions, and this summer was another occasion. I want you to hear some of the writings and the words from him, and I quote, "Evil is God's enemy, period. Not God's instrument, not God's counterpart, not something about which God is indifferent. Evil is God's enemy, period." End of quote. A question in my mind, and maybe in yours. If evil is God's enemy, why does he not stop it? And Tom Long shares some thoughts, and I like what he says, and I want to share them with you. And I quote, "God cannot do so in the way we want God to do so." What exactly does that mean? Whenever we imagine how God, to our way of thinking and understand, should respond to evil, we inevitably project ourselves and our thought processes largely. In other words, we think how we would respond to evil if we had God's great power. God does come in the midst of evil to fight it, but God comes in one way. God comes in love. God is indeed all-powerful, but God's power is not like human power, but is instead a love that transforms a weakness, a power expressed most dramatically on that cross. When we want God to plunge into creation with a machete to slash away evil, is that not some kind of way of thinking of God's power? But that's our way of thinking what God should do, and that is not the character of God, and thank goodness it is not. Dr. Tom Long writes, if there is to be a genuine Christian response to evil, it must bear witness to the ultimate victory of God, to that time, and he quotes Revelation, when we will wipe away every tear from their eyes, death will be no more, mourning and crying and pain will be no more, for the first things have passed away. But it must also bear witness to what God is doing now. In the midst of our lives, in the midst of history, in the midst of our pain, in the midst of pain and suffering and the evil all around us, God is there. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the book Becoming Human, or the writer Jean Vanier. He is the founder of what is called the LIARC community. It's a community that works with those with disabilities literally around the world. Jean Vanier had made a visit to a children's ward in a mental hospital. And he writes, I once visited a psychiatric hospital that was kind of a warehouse of human misery. Hundreds of children with severe disabilities were lying neglected on their cots. There was a deadly silence. Not one of them was crying. When they realized that nobody cares, that nobody will answer them, children no longer cry. It takes too much energy. He goes on to write, we cry out only when there is hope that someone may hear us. And God hears the cries of the suffering. God comes with healing in God's wings. God comes, in fact, as a warrior ready to do battle. The suffering and the pain of these children and these other things that we mention are enemies of God. It is from our perspective, in the middle of this day and time in our history, we do not know everything about where the evil comes from. But we know that it is God's mortal enemy, and God comes to do combat, for God comes in the power of that cross. God comes in the power of love. So as we continue to live out our days, we will face many questions for which we will not be given answers. But the good news is we will never face any sorrows for which we will not be given strength. I believe that. I believe that we will be given enough strength to do the next right thing, enough strength, enough courage to keep moving until finally we stumble our way through that darkness And we may just be staggering back out into the light of the gospel of Christ. It is possible because of that cross and the coming of Christ in our lives now and every day. We continue on our journey with our questions, our suffering, and even being witnesses to the evil around us. But may we always respond in love. For it was the love of God, seemingly so weak on that cross, and so victorious and ultimately destroys the power of evil. And as Amos reminds us in that wonderful imagery, let justice roll down like waters and righteousness like an ever-flowing stream. Thanks be to God.